Joining us now is Matt. He's a certified DEI expert. And Matt, let's start with what you do. What is a certified DEI expert?
Well, that's someone who takes you on a journey of diversity and inclusion. And speaking of journeys, you know, it's all about how you begin the journey. We cover this in the workshop. I like to start with a what's called a land acknowledgement. I don't know if you're familiar with those. I brought one along for this broadcast. So I would like to begin by acknowledging that this broadcast is airing in the traditional lands of the Ute, the Paiute, the Goshute, and the Shoshone tribes. These are the peoples who called this land home before it was ravaged and ransacked by the white man.
And this is a lot of things that we don't necessarily think about. Mm-hmm. And this is part of the journey that you'd like to teach other folks in your workshops.
If you wouldn't mind, I'd go through the exercise right now.
Go ahead. What is it?
So, can we do all do it together?
Yeah, do we stand?
Yeah, we stand for it.
Okay.
It's very, very simple. It's very, very simple. I start every day like this. So what you're doing is you're stretching, and this is more for you and less for you, but you're stretching up like this, and you're stretching out. And what you're doing is you're stretching out of your whiteness. Okay, so you're decentering your whiteness. You're stretching out of your whiteness.
You're probably wondering if this is real. The answer is yes, it's real. That's me, Matt Walsh, in real life, with the man bun and the skinny jeans, on an actual news show as a certified DEI expert. If you don't know, DEI stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. It's all the rage right now. But you're still probably asking, what am I doing on this TV show? How did I get there? And how did I become a certified DEI expert? Well, it's a complicated story. Guy my whole life. Growing up in the 90s, I never thought much about race. I mean, yeah, sure, you noticed if somebody was black or white or Mexican or whatever, but it never really seemed to matter that much. At least not to me.
Do we think the vast majority of Americans are racist? That's what I'm trying to... I hope we understand.
I think that there is a significant portion that are racist, and you can't...
These days, though, we're told that racial tensions are high. It's all over the media.
Lot of racists in this country.
We're doing a big story about race in America.
Race in America.
Black, Latino, and Indigenous people are suffering and dying.
Violent white supremacy.
White entitlement.
This is America.
Overnight, growing national unrest.
We've got to do the work.
Coffee?
Yes, thank you.
How do you take it?
That was awkward. Should I not have said black? That's how I like my coffee. I don't like cream. Is that so wrong? I don't think the two should be mixed. Okay, that does sound racist. Wait, am I racist? What is racism? If I'm gonna sort this out, I need to talk to an expert. Preferably someone outside of my bubble. Somebody who can speak with authority about the black experience in America. Or I'll just talk to this white woman. This is Kate Slater. She's an anti-racist scholar and educator.
Hi.
Nice to meet you. Matt, how are you? And you are the co-creator of something called the Anti-Racist Roadmap.
Yeah.
So what is that?
After 2020, we saw a lot of white people saying, okay, I know I need to do the work, but I don't know what the work is.
So what is the work? Because I want to do...
The work. That.
I want to do it too, but I don't know what is the work.
I think for white folks, the work is reallocating our resources and privileges to balance out systemic inequities. So that means there is a white person who says, okay, I'm ready to interrupt racism, or I'm gonna be really nice to that black or brown person because that's the work. But they're never willing to interrupt their shitty racist uncle.
That's a powerful example for me. You mentioned the racist uncle.
I've got one too.
Yeah, but you're saying sometimes we have to confront those people.
Oh, absolutely. Because if you're not gonna confront them, who is?
When is the right age to talk to our kids about their racism?
Before they can talk. I mean it. I.
So it's my 6-month-old baby. I used.
Why the hell not? Why the hell not?
My 6-month-old, and honestly, they've gone through 6 months of life. I've never talked to them about racism.
So my daughter's 4 years old. I am an anti-racist educator, quote unquote. She's still watching Disney movies, and she is choosing a white princess over princesses of color.
Have you talked to her about that?
All the time.
My 3-year-old daughter is her favorite princess is Moana.
Love it.
It's a good sign.
Yeah.
But then I also thought, you know, there's a little bit of cultural appropriation here. She wants to be Moana for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we navigate that? Do I go and buy the Pacific Islander native attire for my white 3-year-old?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't.
But I guess what we might call the Moana problem here is what, on one hand, there's cultural appropriation. On the other hand, there's gravitating towards white characters.
Right.
So it's almost like no matter which way you go, you end up back in racism.
We think every space belongs to us because we live in a white supremacist society.
Is America an inherently racist country?
I think the word inherent is challenging there. If we say...
Fundamentally.
Fundamentally, yes. America is racist to its bones. All of the...
So inherently.
Yeah.
Just to put it as bluntly as possible, am I racist?
Every white person in America has grown up in a country where race and racism make up the fabric of our society. So I don't think anyone moves through this world with a non-biased, non-racist worldview.
So the answer is yes, I am racist.
You said it.
Yeah. What would you recommend? What do you recommend to people for resources if they're just starting on their anti-racist path?
Go to the bookstore. If you're not reading these books and then applying what you've learned, taking what you read about and saying, hey, racist uncle, I think we should talk about this, then you're no good.
You know, I've never confronted my own racist uncle. I haven't confronted him. But it's not ever too late.
No. No. Sometimes it means having the conversation that you've been knowing in your heart you've been putting off for years.
If Kate Slater is right, then it's all worse than I thought. America is racist down to its bones. And my Uncle Frank? Well, I'll deal with him later. For now, I've got a lot of reading to do.
Books on anti-racism kind of all throughout the store. There's a lot of like newer stuff tends to go on the main floor first, but the bulk of our section we keep over here.
And this is all anti-racism?
Yeah, this section is really just books on anti-racism and a lot of the history of racism, particularly in the United States.
Am I even allowed to touch this one? Some of these books are provocative.
Yes, definitely.
So what am I allowed to even read this one?
I think you're allowed to read it. I would not perhaps say the title.
So I couldn't call you up and say, do you have...
You might say it's a book that starts with N and it's by this author, if you were looking for that in particular.
That's probably a level up from where I am. How many of these do you think we need to get through before we can really understand?
Start with one book, let it sit, see how you feel. I feel like reading one book kind of gets you into a place where it's like, you know what, I do want to do more about this. These are all staff recommendations. They're all fiction written by diverse authors, and they're all pretty fun.
Dumb question. You said diverse authors. What's a diverse person?
That would be basically people who aren't white, essentially. So Black, Latinx, Native American, Asian.
So everybody who's not white is diverse.
Well...
Unless you say gay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just reading black people, but, you know, every, like, there are a lot of different groups that have faced persecution and have had a hard time. And, you know, it's just being a white, straight, cisgender person, usually man, it's like kind of the top of the pile. But
that's me. So I'm on the top of the pile.
You know,
where should I start?
White Women by Regina Jackson and Syra Rao. Race to Dinner is a thing that they do. Basically, this book is saying, like, we need to stop being nice about racism because nothing has been advanced by being nice. White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. Hearing from another white person about ways to have these conversations and ways to break through your own white fragility, I think, is a really good place to start.
Well, lots to learn, but we have all the materials here, I think, to start the journey. Beautiful bookstore.
Thank you. We're fond of it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Robin DiAngelo's 2018 book, White Fragility, catapulted to the top of the New York Times bestsellers list.
Robin DiAngelo is a sociologist, and she's author of this book.
Everyone, please check out her book, White Fragility. Everyone else in the world has.
White Fragility, which is, in many cases, the Bible for white people.
This is the book that we will be reading.
White Fragility.
Crucial and seminal book.
New York Times bestselling list for the third year.
Racism is the norm rather than an aberration. Anti-blackness is foundational to our very identities as white people.
As a white person, I was just raised to expect the world to be mine.
That's how difficult we are.
Wow.
That's how big a a-holes we are.
Yeah.
White identity is inherently racist. White people do not exist outside the system of white supremacy.
When we say I'm not racist, what we're conveying is that we're clueless about what racism is. And I would just ask white Americans to remove that phrase from their vocabulary. I'm not racist.
Anger, fear, and guilt, and behavior such as argumentation, silence, and withdrawal. These responses work to maintain our dominance within the racial hierarchy. I conceptualize this process as white fragility. Robin DiAngelo is right. Coming to terms with my whiteness, it's not going to be easy. Fortunately, I found a support group that can help me with my white privilege, run by an anti-racist expert who specializes in grief. Her fee was $30,000 to host this workshop, so obviously she must be the best. But I'm worried that, as a well-known conservative, the support group may not welcome me into their fold. Maybe I'll use a different name to help me blend in. Whatever it takes to continue this journey.
All right, so typically I like to open up the space with a brief meditation. So if you feel comfortable, please ground yourself in your seat, close your eyes, and just allow yourself to be fully present in the space, whatever that means.
Are we meditating? Okay, sorry.
When you are ready, open your eyes and rejoin the space. All right, so is everybody excited to talk about anti-racism and grief?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I usually like to get this started by just introducing ourselves. If you could please pronounce your name, please share your pronouns, how you're feeling today, as well as the weirdest compliment you have ever received.
My name is Dan. My pronouns are he, him. I'm feeling excited today. And then the weirdest compliment I think I've ever received, I was in the online dating sphere, and I've gotten the, you look much better in person.
If you want to stand, it's okay.
I'm Steven. Pronouns, I'll
You know, I'll have to get back to you on that. I'm feeling excited, nervous, present, a little hungry. But the strangest compliment I've ever gotten is I've been complimented on the number of black friends that I have in the past. So it's 17 is the number. It, you know, sometimes it comes up, but that's what people have said, so.
Thank you, everybody, for being willing to participate and for first and foremost being here. We will not end systemic racism. It is not possible for us to dismantle a system that has been around for 400 years and has effectively and efficiently destroyed the lives of millions of people. You all have been grandfathered into the system. We are here to focus on you and your experience and your grief because that is the source of downstream anti-blackness and racism. And quite frankly, I pray to God you all feel just uncomfortable. I will be so happy if you all feel extremely uncomfortable, if you are truly looking at what white supremacy has done to not only African-Americans, but to yourselves. You are here to sit amidst whatever suffering and pain you are experiencing for the sake of the liberation of others. That is love. I don't know if any of you grew up with a Christian background. I did. but love is also not always patient and kind. When we are talking about systemic oppression and the role that we are playing to mitigate it, patience is not needed. People are dying. Kindness is not what is called for. We are here to talk about the fact that Black Americans are not safe. If I'm going to be quite frank, when I do this work in these types of circles, I'm not safe. But I do them out of necessity.
Why are you not safe in the circle?
Being an African American in primarily white spaces is not safe for me mentally or emotionally. We will go into more depth about that, but I appreciate that question. These topics may be difficult, and at times you may feel overcome by emotions. That's okay. There is a room to the left. If you find that your emotions are interfering with the group process, I kindly ask you to step aside. So can we start with you?
I'm here because I feel like I've been socialized to be an asshole, and that doesn't feel good. And my promise to the Black community is to lean into being brave and uncomfortable and to love in inconvenient ways.
Thank you.
Well, I'm here on a journey towards a brighter future for myself and for, you know, hopefully the world. My promise to myself is love, to love myself, which is so important. And I've struggled so much with that. I've struggled so much with it in my life to love myself. My promise to the Black community is to be so much better. So much better than I have been to them. To be better in so many better ways. To better myself. To better the world. And I know that I haven't been better. I haven't been. But I'm going to be. That's my promise.
Thank you.
Oh.
I am here with the intention to understand and learn and dig a little bit.
I'm sorry, I forgot one other thing I wanted to promise the Black community.
It's really important that we don't interrupt each other during the group, I appreciate
it. I had one other promise to the Black. We can circle back around.
Thank you.
Are we gonna circle back around?
No. Other things will come up. That's part of the process. But I want to be very sure that we respect everybody's time.
Okay, yeah. I didn't want someone else to take my promise to the Black community that I was going to make.
Well, thank you. Please continue.
The promise that I'm making to myself is to be elastic, to use my voice and my privilege to be heard,
That's what I was going to say. Right.
Please allow her to finish.
Sorry.
If we think about the construction of whiteness as an identity, it makes sense that the seeds of white supremacy are buried within your subconscious, whether or not you realize it, and without your consent. It is often uncommon for white Americans to be aware of their privilege, let alone how it's functioning on a day-to-day basis.
You said a moment ago.
Yes, ask a question.
You said a moment ago that the seeds of white supremacy are in all of us?
Yes.
How do we get them out?
That's with the presentation. We're going through the presentation to discuss that. If there's another interruption, I'm going to have to respectfully ask you to step out and go to the second room to the left. But next time, I am going to have to ask you to leave, okay?
Leave for good?
Just until you're able to rejoin the group and participate without interruption. Yeah?
That's fair.
Okay, thank you. White supremacy has essentially created a system driven by grief. And that is why we are here to discuss white grief in particular. I would like you to close your eyes and spend the next 30 seconds thinking about what does that loss feel like in your body?
Feels like 1,000 knives plunging into my soul. In a sack being hit by bats and bricks, and the whole sack is thrown into the ocean.
Thank you.
That's what it feels like. It's...
What? We're moving to her now.
Well, I didn't finish.
Please finish.
The sack's thrown into the ocean, and then the sack's taken out, and it's set on fire.
Thank you.
That's what it feels like.
I have spent a lot of time in primarily white spaces, for better or worse. So, and that has come with a cost. How long will it take until the next microaggression comes up? These are things that I carry every time I am in a room with primarily white people.
You're safe here. I think I speak for all of us when I say, in this room...
One more interruption, right, I'm going to have to ask you to step out again.
Okay, I just wanted to reassure you.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
I just wanted to...
Thanks. So, what do you feel in your body when you hear the term white people?
I feel like a cringe about it.
Cringe is a good word.
Cringe, yeah.
Pick a word, but that's a very good one.
Okay.
Yeah. As soon as you asked the question, I felt inside, like a gut, a little bit of a poke. Mm-hmm. And I think it's for all of the reasons, but also a little anchor. Mm-hmm. Whiteness as that lie, just, oof. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The thing about...
Step out for a moment.
Thank you. Appreciate that. The thing about...
Which one is the cry room?
The second door to the left.
Thank you.
My time in the cry room allowed me some much-needed reflection and self-care. But with me out of the room, the group put two and two together and realized who I actually was. Not a guy named Steven. When I finally returned, things were drastically different.
When I do this work, the white participants in the group feel that there's something in themselves that they have to overcome. When all that's being requested of you is that you be. Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. You good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remind me of your name again.
Steven.
Steven? Yeah? Okay. Do you want to come up?
Come up?
Yeah. Do you want to come up and share anything?
Sure. What do you want me to share?
Whatever's on your mind.
I just want to know that, like, my physical safety and yours and everybody else's here is okay.
Why would your physical safety not be okay? Did I miss something?
I don't feel comfortable.
What? Can you guys catch me up to speed on what's going on here?
You don't need to be caught up. We're going to be silent.
Is it because I said I had 17 black friends? It might have been 15. It depends on how you count them.
I would really appreciate it if you left so that the people who actually want to be here and deserve to be here can get what they need.
I do want to be here.
Can you please leave?
I would like it if you left.
I'm trying to learn. I'm on this journey.
Come with me.
Well,
thank you.
I didn't consent to be touched.
I'm not offering to touch you. I'm offering to walk you out. Will you walk with me and I'll answer your questions?
Okay. I'll admit it. My name's not Steven. Maybe you already knew that. My name is Matt Walsh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We know.
I just was here on this journey that I'm just starting, but I see that I'm not wanted.
If you were on your journey, then you would have told us who you were, your real name, but you didn't.
Are you saying Please I needed leave. A better disguise? Is that what you...
I don't know, maybe. But you can figure that out as you walk out the door.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Thank you so much. I really had the transformative experience myself. And my pronouns are he, him.
I did everything I could to fit in. I opened up. I was raw and emotional. I told them about my black friends. It was no use. They rejected me, and they called the police. My mere presence in the room caused them pain. I'll never be accepted if I look like this. If they know that I'm Matt Walsh, I'll always be an outsider. I need to go deeper undercover, a whole new identity. If I want to be an ally, I need to look like one. Like someone who is progressive, tolerant, enlightened. Let me think. Have I ever met anyone like that? Ah, yes. Yes, I have.
What is a woman?
Why do you ask that question?
Time to get serious about my anti-racist training. And it's not going to be cheap.
Nice to meet you.
Matt, how are you?
Thanks. Nice to meet you.
I guess I'll take my seat here.
I'm going to show y'all how to stop being racist. You got to do the work, though.
What is race?
Okay, don't be a bigot. Post a black square. Drink Bud Light, bit blue dye in your hair. Tell your sons to put on a dress. Who cares what they wear? Ukraine flag and bio. Okay, we're almost there.
So it emerged in the late 1600s, essentially.
Did race exist as a reality before?
We made race exist.
Don't be early for work, that's white supremacy. And if you drink, make sure it's Hennessy. Math is racist too, so check the history. And if you don't see it, then check your memory. Do the work, do the work. If you wanna stop being racist, do the work. Do the work, do the work. Nigga, what did white privilege do to work?
Now that we've talked a little bit about what race is, then what is racism?
Do the work. Do the work. If you want to stop being racist, do the work.
Robin DiAngelo, so she's the author of the book White Fragility, she talks about the system of racism that we have in the U.S. is based in white supremacy.
Do the work. Do the work. If you want to stop being racist, do the work.
This is why a conversation about reparations and about repair is important.
Do the work, do the work.
Ultimately, should we be colorblind society, is what Martin Luther King said, not to judge people by the color of their skin.
So Martin Luther King said a lot of stuff, but he knew about institutional, interpersonal, and internalized racism.
I've been told because I'm a white male, I'm kind of at the top of the pile. How do I get down from the top if I say I don't want that advantage?
I don't think you necessarily can. The reason we cannot be colorblind now is because we're still working on the problem.
Do the work, do the work. Let go of your white privilege, do the work. Do the work, do the work. If you wanna stop being racist, do the work. Do the work, do the work. If you wanna stop being racist, do the work.
DEI certified. How are you? DEI certified. I'm here to help. DEI certified. If you need some help, let me know, sir. DEI certified.
What?
Let me know if you need some help. I'm DEI certified.
Oh, God.
If you need any help, just let me know.
My name is Matt. I am certified in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Just got my certification. Just letting you know, I am DEI certified. DEI certified.
What is DEI?
You're in good hands here. I'm qualified to have these kinds of important dialogues. So I guess I start with, where are you guys in your anti-racist journeys? Just talk to me about decentering your whiteness and where you are on that journey.
Decentering my whiteness?
Yeah.
Why do I have to go away from my whiteness and decentralize it?
I recently actually took a master's level course about inclusion and diversity.
Have you heard of diversityandinclusion.com?
Not.
A couple different prestigious institutions. We all go to different schools, but go ahead.
There were some things that, you know, kind of brought to my thought process during that course that I had never
like what?
Thought about before. Just about my own thinking when you start thinking about how you feel, but you maybe don't want to feel. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. What do you mean?
All I know is that, like, I am white and I am not racist.
That's how we deal with racism? We just say, oh, it's not happening.
Blinders. Yeah, the more you talk about it, the more you are blatantly acknowledging race. And if you want
to
forget about it, you need to shut up about it.
I don't want to forget about it.
It's cool. Like, you can flash your card all you want, but you got to be a real human at some point in your life.
Did you see the card?
I don't give a damn about your card, bro.
I see it.
Like, we're not going to solve racism in this conversation, but we can all agree that you guys have some things to learn.
I feel like you're the most racist person I've ever talked to.
One of us got the license, the other one didn't, so.
Is that a lot of fun?
You just sound like a really racist person.
That I am. I've realized that. I've been
told
that.
Why do you admit that?
Because denying it doesn't make it go away. Can't all be certified experts. I mean, I am, but we can't all be. All right. We're still on a journey, all of us together.
Yeah.
That's my motto.
I think you got some journeying to do.
I know I make this look easy, but DEI work is harder than you think. I still have a lot to learn.
A viral video from September at ASU's Multicultural Center ignited a firestorm.
What did I do wrong?
You have a bad.
You're offensive. You're making this space uncomfortable. But you're white. This white man thinks he can take up our space, and this is why we need a multicultural space.
You are racist. Your sticker is racist because you can choose to be a cop, you can choose to kill people with a badge, and you're protecting that shit, which means that you're racist.
Meet the charming young lady from that video, Sarah Tacola, founding member of Black Lives Matter Phoenix. She has a PhD in sustainability, which means something really important, I'm sure. She's agreed to help me learn how to decolonize myself. For a $1,500 fee, of course.
So let's just get this kicked off. I'm a white guy myself. What's up with white people?
Where do we start?
Maybe reframe the question a little bit. What's wrong with white people?
A lot of it has to do with cognitive dissonance, which allows white people to feel okay about what happened. There's actually a lot of studies on Nazi doctors and how they were able to live with themselves. And it's not that much different than white Americans or white people around the world, right? It's this splitting of the self. And so you have this part of you that knows that they did wrong, the shadow self, and that you have to split that, and you have the other self that's like, oh, I didn't do anything wrong. Racism? Why are you blaming me for what my ancestors did? It's not my fault.
Is racism inherent to whiteness?
I would say so. I would say that we need to abolish whiteness. It's always been rooted in othering the other people who don't fit into whiteness. But when we look at white culture, the only thing about white culture is buying things and stealing things.
How do I confront my shadow self?
Acknowledging the parts of you that are racist and then being able to unpack and unlearn those.
Could I say, if someone called me racist, could I say, well, I'm not racist. My shadow self is, but I'm not.
It's the splitting of the self, like I said in the beginning about Nazi doctors. The fact that you have two selves is the problem. The more that you can merge it together, then you can be able to acknowledge these dark
sides.
But
I don't want to merge it because the shadow self is racist. So I don't want to be merged, right? I want to.
No,
separate.
You have to. Yeah, because the thing is, when you don't merge them together, your shadow self is out here being racist, and you're not even aware of it because that self, right?
The so way I gotta that pull the, him in, I gotta merge him with mine, yeah. But then make it all not racist.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, where do I go from here as an individual on this anti-racist journey?
You should know whose land you're on. Our existence as Americans is predicated on other people's suffering. Learn about who is suffering because of our existence on this stolen land. It is important to feel bad about what your ancestors did.
Embrace the pain.
Yes.
To be a good ally, I need to be an activist. Our nation is littered with relics from our racist past. I'm on a mission to right historical wrongs. I needed some help, so I asked Ben, one of my 17 black friends, to join me on my quest to change the world.
We have a petition. We're hoping that maybe you'd be willing to sign it. We have a petition. We want to rename the George Washington Monument to the George Floyd Monument. Because, of course, George Washington was a slave owner.
Yep.
And so in some ways, it's a symbolic symmetry. It's George for George, you might say. Would you mind signing?
I'll see why not.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that.
We're talking about painting it black. We're going to raise it 30% increase in the height. Excuse me, sir. Sir, we have a petition, sir, for historical inequities to redress.
Is there a black person around here? I would hug them and apologize to them all day long for what happened.
There's a black person right here. Does he not exist?
I'm sorry, I just didn't look that direction.
It sounds like you're in the habit of overlooking marginalized communities.
Brother, you are an American. I love you. I'm sorry for what happened in the past.
So
I really am.
Let's just sign it and move on. You don't have an opinion, but you'll sign it anyway?
If that's what you'd like me to, I can help.
I would like you to.
I can help you guys out.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Sign here?
Yes, absolutely.
I think it's a beautiful idea.
You think it's a beautiful idea?
I do.
We've got an encouraging number of signatures so far. We have a petition for to redress historical inequities. Would you mind signing it? You will? We want to rename the George Washington Monument to the George Floyd Monument. Thank you so much. Would you be willing to?
Can't agree with that.
Yeah, will you sign it?
No.
So are you going to erase all of them?
Yes.
No.
Well, can you sign it anyway?
Nope.
Getting people to agree to change the George Washington Monument to the George Floyd Monument seemed ambitious. I'm pleasantly surprised people are willing to erase our problematic history.
If you want to stop being racist, do the work.
It's come with a full 60-day money.
There's a controversial documentary out entitled Deconstructing Karen.
How many of you would trade places with a black person in this society? Raise your hand.
Today on an all-new Dr. Phil, Regina Jackson and Syra Raub. Now, they are co-founders of Race to Dinner. What did you expect at these dinners?
It's basically exactly what we expect is what we get.
Some women are ready to do the work, but pretty much when they come to the dinners, it's not me. I'm not racist.
Hold on a minute. I've heard of these ladies before.
Race to Dinner is a thing that they do. Basically, this book is saying, like, we need to stop being nice about racism.
Stop being nice about racism? What a concept. Apparently, you just pay these ladies thousands of dollars to come over for dinner and call you racist. It's genius. I absolutely need to attend one of these dinners. But there's a big problem. Only white women are allowed to attend. Why do white women get to have all the fun? I need to find another way to earn a seat at the table.
So at these dinners, we only have one rule. And the rule is that if you have to cry, you have to leave the table. Generally, we will have the hostess set up a room, you know, with lots of tissue and everything, so you can go in there and sob your heart out. When a white woman starts crying, it draws all the attention from the room onto that poor white woman.
Yeah. So. Even the language of whiteness softens everything. White fragility, so what that is, and by the way, a white woman, you know, your hero, Robin DiAngelo, coined that term, and it's for when black and brown people talk about racism and then white people get upset, you know, angry, and then deflect the conversation by not wanting to address your racism and your white supremacy. That is upholding white supremacy. That is not fragile. So just think about how even language to describe your violent behavior is couched in ways to make you all seem delicate.
And to make you comfortable.
So tell us one instance that your racism has shown up recently.
And that's either something you did,
didn't do,
thought, or an action.
So my husband's black, so it can be an everyday white supremacist thing. Like if I'm out in public and he's like really loud or something and I'll shush him.
Why do you do that?
Usually because we're in a space that I think should be quiet, which is probably my white supremacy talking.
So that's basically tone policing,
yeah.
A black person
mm-hmm.
who happens to be your husband.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Who's next?
This one mom starts going on about how her white son is so screwed. Been rejected here and white boy, white boy.
All right, white entitlement, white centering, tone policing, white silence. White women owned slaves, period. That's what it is. Let's be clear what's happening in this country. It's Nazism. Republicans are Nazis. I assume it sounds like everyone here is probably not a Republican. I might be wrong. Am I wrong about there? Is there any Republican at this table? You cannot separate yourselves from the bad white people. The proliferation of guns has happened every time whites feel terrified of black and brown people, which is literally every 10 seconds, but also when there's an event like Obama, like Ferguson, like 9/11, like COVID-19, like George Floyd, thank you. You've been killing all of us, right? Primarily black folks, and we're just right behind, right? There's the hierarchy. Whiteness is even more insidious than I even knew even a year ago. And whiteness also robs you of your brain. You know, you all have gave up your reproductive health rights without, you wouldn't even get off your Peloton bike for 10 minutes to go protest that.
Did you want a second row?
No, thank you. Oh, okay, I'm good.
Black people know that white people believe they need their guns to protect yourselves from us.
We have decided that it's okay for the Second Amendment, which is literally synonymous with white supremacy, to be our Bible. This is what anti-racism is. It's actually what anti-whiteness is. It has to burn. Mm-hmm. The entire system has to burn. And I'm not gonna even use save this country. This country is not worth saving. This country is a piece of shit.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, sorry.
But yes, aren't you all tired mm-hmm. of living like this? Seriously? I mean, I used to be a white woman, an unsuccessful one, for many decades, and it was a miserable experience. And really, the hatred of yourselves and each other is like the most, the not seeing your power, the being afraid. Like, all you do is talk shit about each other, talk shit about yourself. Oh my God,
that's
so
all
fat.
They do. That's all they do. I'm telling you, these white women.
But it's, that's it. It's, I'm so fat, I'm so stupid, I'm blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Sorry.
Your kids are watching you, and they're watching you talking shit about each other, you know, raging against the machine or being silent or whatever the hell it is that you're doing or not doing, and they know that you're not doing shit for them.
That's so important. That is so important what you just said. It's really important. That's
we
all.
We may have to add you to our team.
Oh, I would love to take a seat and join you.
No, you're not allowed to.
Okay.
Definitely not allowed.
Okay. I do have my DEI certification that I got.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Not saying I'm an expert, but I'm also not a novice. So, okay.
White people are starved for these conversations.
We are. Yeah. We're so starving.
Yeah.
We are so starving for this.
Anyone else? Want to say anything?
I'll just say one thing. I'm so glad we can have these conversations, and I'll be done. But I'm just so glad that we could all get together to have these conversations. That's
Thank
all I wanted
you.
To say.
Is he an actor? Are you
no.
an actor?
Oh,
can
no.
you let us? We're trying to listen and trying to have this conversation.
Okay. You know, we're all acting all the time in our lives, and I think that that's part of the problem, you know? That it's like we're all trying to play a part rather than just being real and having these uncomfortable conversations.
And that's what I'm always trying to tell people, especially, you know, white women. No offense. But
no, so. But see, like, you're a white dude. There's power positions and, you know, it's pointing white people, pointing fingers at each other is not helpful.
You know, I've been on this journey for so long, and just to see you guys at the table having this conversation has been really
enlightening for me.
Anyway, I got the DEI certification, and I'm just on the journey. All right, you ladies have a great night.
Decolonize yourself. Do your own white supremacy dismantling. And then you can start to bring in other people.
Can I just say one last thing? Can I just propose a toast? Just raise a glass if you're racist. And that's the thing.
Cheers. I'm not racist. Let me
just raise it. Well, all the rest of them. To racist.
What a charming group of ladies. I've learned a lot from my fellow anti-racists, but now it's time to evangelize, to go to white America and teach them about their privilege. This biker bar will do just fine. I'm sure these people would love to have an honest dialogue about the perils of whiteness.
Doing personally in your life to decenter your whiteness?
What do you mean decenter it?
Well, take it away from the center of.
Who's making it the center? Why are they doing that? Why race got to be thrown in on everything?
I mean, you're white. You're white.
So, who cares? I mean, really, the way that the world's going right now, people need to be concerned with how they're going to feed their families, not what color's that man's skin. I got black friends. I love them too, but they know they're black.
Do you know they're black?
Well, of course I do, and I like it. Good for them.
Well, you know, one thing I've learned is that if you meet a black person, you want to forget that they're black, but don't forget that they're black.
Why would you want to forget that they're black?
Well, don't, but also don't.
Are they a friend? Then you should embrace them being black. I think black men should have pride in being black, and I think you should have pride in being white.
Well, I agree with the first part. Hello, sir?
Nice.
What's your name?
Pat.
Pat?
Yeah.
What about you? Do you have a... kids? Do you have a wife?
Yeah, I've got two or three kids.
Two or three kids?
Yeah.
And you don't have to give me the whole list, but what are some ways that you're confronting your whiteness?
My whiteness?
Yeah.
I get along good with black people. I used to have a black brother. I called him my brother. He called me his brother.
Was he really your brother?
No, he wasn't.
You're calling a black man brother?
Yeah. I have more black friends living in Hartsville than I have white friends.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's in your own life, but systemically...
Because there's the white thing you got now.
Yeah. Just to summarize, but what do you think about this issue of heteronormativity and how it intersects with the broader structures of racism in society?
Huh?
I mean, ultimately, how do we get to a point of, let's say, racial harmony?
I don't know, but I'm just telling you what I see.
It's a lot to think about on my own journey. It's good to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a vegetarian as well. Just starting on the vegan journey also, so I'm glad
I don't
to know.
Say vegetarian.
It's a...
Vagina-tarian.
What is that? It's a little bit of a sexist joke.
Well, you know, it is what it is.
What do you think about racism in society? Is it, you think it's a big problem?
I was born in 1960. My dad, my uncle, my granddaddy were Klansmen. It never affected me.
But you don't have, you're not
no.
racist?
No, not at all.
And how do you know? How do either of you know that you're, whether
because
or not
Because I accept people as they are.
Exactly.
If you approach me as a human being, then I'm gonna be a human being too.
We all bleed the same way.
What do you think about systemic racism?
Systemic? What the hell is that?
Is the system constructed in such a way as to marginalize people of color?
You want to do away with racism? Quit labeling people as black and white.
Exactly.
But that's colorblindness, which is problematic.
If I meet you as a black man and you approach me, I shake your hand, we go in here, we have a conversation, we have a beer, or ride down the road on a motorcycle. What the hell's your color got to do with it? It's all right here, Bubba.
You take me for a ride, then you ride. And I don't care what color they are, you gotta treat each other right.
I was expecting these bikers would be a bunch of racists. And obviously I was right. These people haven't even started to decenter their whiteness. Now I need to go deeper into the racist South so that I can talk to people of color about their lived experience with racism.
I was in the drug game for 18 years of my life, man, and 14 and a half years went all to incarceration.
So how did you get 13, out?
I got out through the pages of the Word of God.
My parents always taught me to love everybody. Don't allow skin color to ever become a problem for you.
We didn't see colors, baby, because we grew up together, and you know, it was a lot of love.
Inherent dignity is in all of us.
Though we're different in so many ways, we're still alike in so many more ways.
So we all want God sight.
Yes.
So how long have you owned the shop here?
I came in August the 15th, 1971, from British Guiana.
Did you start a family and all that?
Yes. I don't have to get, I got 53 grandchildren.
Wow.
Yeah.
You think the country's been good to you?
Yeah, very good. Very good, yeah.
How do you feel about America today?
America, man, is a beautiful country. A beautiful country. I don't have no problem here.
A lot of people pretty critical of this country, and, you know.
I don't know why.
It can be kind of a racist country.
No.
You experience a lot of microaggressions out here?
Nah, not healthy. No.
But what about the systemic issue? Systemic.
What do you mean by systemic?
Well, the whole country, the system. The system isn't, the system is racist.
Not to me.
Not to you?
No, not to me, man. I don't think about those things, racism and all that stuff.
I've been reading a lot of books recently. Robin DiAngelo, White Fragility, obviously. We're reading a lot of anti-racist literature.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't read them things.
What do you read?
The only thing I read is the Bible. My guy in my car right there. If you go to my car, you see right there on the seat.
So you haven't read any Robin DiAngelo?
No. Robin DiAngelo, who is that?
Well, she's an anti-racist.
I never read them kind of books. If I get the book like that, I put it down. I don't want it.
I got a couple copies in my car. I can give you one.
No, I don't want it. I don't want it. No, because that is not in my heart. No.
I've kind of been working on decentering my whiteness.
Oh, your whiteness? I know, baby. I'll bleed the same thing, dude. If I cut you right now, you will bleed just like me. Is that the color of your skin?
How do we get past all the talk about racism and the...
We got to love each other, like I said. We have to love each other. That's how you get past racism.
Well, it can't be that simple.
Huh?
Is it that simple?
Well, I mean, to me.
Something's not right. These people said the same thing as those bikers. White supremacy is more pervasive than I ever imagined. I need to talk to someone who has stared directly into the face of racism.
July 16th, mm-hmm. 2022. Mm-hmm. Difficult day for you.
Very.
And for America.
The Popular Kids Amusement Park apologized after a video went viral that appeared to show a costume character snubbing two black girls.
Okay, you see the character coming, high-fiving everybody as it goes down the street, gets to those two little girls. It appears to just flat out say no, and you see the little girls and their faces and they're heartbroken.
Meet Jody Brown, the mother who was victimized at the hands of Rosita, the Sesame Street character. She was reluctant to talk about the traumatic incident, but for $50,000, she was willing to tell her tragic story.
Now, you have described this moment as disgusting.
Because I feel like if you are able to acknowledge someone before my children and after my children, you could have stopped 2 seconds just to say hello.
This was something targeted at you and your child.
It was a very intentional racist act.
We don't want some explanation that, oh, the performer didn't see these two young girls, which one of them is in isolation today from the harm that has been caused by this company. So we're going to demand that they take care of any type of health care or mental care expenses that these children have realized.
And who is Rosita? Who's in that costume?
Mel Gibson.
I think that person needs to be, you know, held accountable, fired and held to account.
Absolutely fired.
Well, before you fire them, teach them why they're being fired.
Yeah.
And then let them go.
How do we fix the endemic racism among mascots?
Mascots, I feel like, need to be trained better.
Do you know who the employee is that was in the costume?
So that information was never given to me.
Do we know if they're white?
That information was also not given to me.
Do you think American society is racist?
There is an epidemic of hate in the United States of America.
Threats of violence, threats of death and destruction.
Hate and racism are alive and well in America.
This is just absolutely crazy.
She was verbally attacked by a group of men.
And I heard distinctly them saying Donald Trump.
Where a hate crime is being investigated.
Third consecutive year, a noose has been found on campus.
Bitter, brutal hate crimes that are on the rise.
17% increase.
20% increase.
55%.
Hate crimes have surged. More than 7,200 hate crimes.
A noose was found in Bubba's garage.
It's not about racing. It's about race.
From the Jussie Smollett hate crime case shows what appears to be a noose around the Empire actor's neck.
You could not get more reprehensible than a noose.
We have a media that's saying it's a debate whether or not what just happened to Jussie Smollett is a hate crime. It's absurd.
I've been truthful and consistent on every single level since day one.
Right now, there is a domestic terrorism prevention bill moving through the House.
The COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act. Thank you.
The Hate Crimes Task Force is investigating
hate crimes.
Hate crimes.
The hate crimes.
Hate crimes.
Hate crimes.
Hate crimes. Your thoughts?
I think that hate crimes are bad. Hate in general is not good.
But they're everywhere now.
No.
It's an epidemic.
No, it's not. Well, out of what, 20 million index crimes a year, there are 6,000, 7,000 hate crimes? No, there's no epidemic. This is one of those things where there's a huge disconnect between media presentation, and this really is something I research professionally. One of the reasons that you're probably talking to me also is that I wrote the book Hate Crime Hoax, and I mean, I noted that over a period of maybe five...
You wrote the book called what?
Hate Crime Hoax. I pointed out that a lot of these incidents, Jussie Smollett, Covington Catholic, Yasmin Saweed, Duke Lacrosse, Bubba Wallace...
Terrible story.
But it didn't happen. That's the thing. None of the stories that I'm mentioning happened. I mean, you could just go on and on with this. Kansas State with the horrible racial epithets written on upscale vehicles.
Okay, let's slow down here for a moment. So you wrote the book. You wrote the book Hate Crime Hoax.
Yes.
We're missing a word in our notes on that.
That's an issue from the producer there. If it just says hate crimes or hate crime epidemic or something like that.
Yeah. And you say that you're black?
Yes.
Don't the statistics show that anti-black hate crimes are a huge problem? If you break down the statistics.
Well, I think that depends on your definition of a huge problem. I mean, so the...
One of the biggest problems.
No, the statistics absolutely do not show that.
But what are the statistics?
If you go into the FBI numbers annually, there are maybe 7,000 actual reported, documented hate crimes in a typical...
In a day?
In a typical year. But the total number of crimes in the United States, more than 2 million committed by African Americans, almost 1 million committed against African Americans. This is just violent crimes. And it's just the case that there are way more crimes than there are hate crimes. No one thinks that direct racial conflict is one of the biggest problems in the country, unless they've been told by the media that it is.
But why are we talking about statistics? This is not a matter of statistics.
Well, you asked me about the statistics.
Every week, practically, we hear another story about someone reporting a hate crime. Let's say they found a noose. They found a racist note on a receipt.
So saying there's a hate crime every week is absolutely meaningless. If you really wanted to solve crime, you'd talk about black-on-black crime, you'd talk about addiction in poor white communities, you'd talk about almost anything but what the major media seems intent on focusing on. Most of those stories turn out to be complete fakes. It seems like the real conversation to have would be about something like hysteria and neuroticism among Americans.
It becomes an opportunity for a conversation about race in America. And we could always use more of that.
I absolutely disagree that we
could
all...
Well,
I disagree with all of that.
Have you heard yet that I'm a certified DEI expert? Here's my certification.
DiversityInclusionTraining.com, making compliance fast, easy, and painless.
You don't need to read it that much. No. Give it back.
Okay. I don't know. Something
brings it's not. That's up. Not the point.
The demand for racism in society right now greatly outweighs the supply. We've attached a sort of value to being a victim. People report these crimes because they know the response will be immediate. It will be sensationalistic. It will be very supportive. Why would Jussie Smollett say what he did? The entire thing was complete nonsense, and I think most serious people knew this from the beginning.
If it was such an obvious hoax, then why did we hear it from the media, from Kamala Harris, all the late-night talk shows?
The question is not why would they ever say something that's not true? It's sort of why do we believe? Because this had a major national impact. This itself impacted race relations by a couple of points.
Despite what the statistics say, this country isn't safe for people of color. I've heard it over and over. If only I could walk in their shoes, then I'd really know what they go through. Looks cold out there. Man, I'm hungry. Where can I get food at this hour?
Open 24 hours. Like, people kill me when they say things like that because it's like Subway is open 24 hours for a reason. So that when you're hungry at night and you ain't got no food, you go to Subway.
What happened that night, Jussie?
I went to the Subway and got the order. You have to understand also that it's Chicago in winter. Intersection, I heard Empire.
Daily Wire.
And I don't answer to Empire. My name ain't Empire. And I didn't answer. I kept walking, and then I heard Empire. So I turned around and I said, did you just say to me? And I see the attacker masked. I had said that they were wearing MAGA hats. I never said that. And he said, this MAGA country punches me right in the face. So I punched his ass back. And then we started tussling. You know, it was very icy. Fighting. There was a second person involved who was kicking me in my back. But I smelled bleach. I know the smell of bleach.
Get him with the bleach! Hit him with the bleach!
Then it just stopped. And they ran off. And then I look down and I see that there's a rope around my neck.
You hadn't noticed it before?
No, because it was so fast. I noticed the rope around my neck and I started screaming. And I said, there's a rope around my neck.
If the attackers are never found, how will you be able to heal?
I don't know. Let's just hope that they are. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's not go there yet.
On second thought, I don't really feel like Subway.
Hi, Robin. Robin D'Angelo. It's an honor. It's an honor to meet you. It's nice to meet you, Robin D'Angelo. Dr. Robin D'Angelo.
Is there a Mr. D'Angelo?
Just asking for a friend. Someone of your esteemed... Robin, would you sign my book? Your book. Would you sign my book? I have of yours. I'm pleading with you to sign my... Please, would you sign my book? To your friend... Matt. Okay. This is it. Don't screw this up. Don't mess this up. Let's do the work. Hi, Robin.
Hi. And what's your name?
I'm Matt.
Matt. Hi, yeah. Matt.
Nice to meet you.
I just had to ask who you are because you have to be careful.
Never be too careful. Let's start with the book, one of the most important books of the past century, I would say, for my money, White Fragility. You've been in this field for a long time. You've done a lot. What sort of organizations have you worked with?
Do you want me to name?
Oh, sure. I mean...
Should I name it? Like, okay. Well, but I don't want to be held responsible for what they do. Netflix, Google, Amazon, Snapchat.
What do you do for them?
Sometimes it's a workshop where it's interactive. Maybe it would take place over several hours or a day.
Well, let's start with some definitions. And probably the biggest one to define is racism.
Well, if you're talking about a white person and you say this person is racist, you're basically, to me, saying this person is a product of their society.
Is it possible for a white person to be not racist?
I think in a given moment, we can be more or less racist. So I think of it more as a continuum than an either or.
Is there any way to get rid of white privilege? If an individual says, I don't want to have this privilege, it feels unfair.
Is there any way for a man to say, I don't want this privilege? I mean, we live in patriarchy and you can't just opt out. You can do your best to challenge it. That in a way is opting out.
That confuses me too, because I don't want to mansplain or white
splain. Yeah, well, okay.
Maybe that's important.
Yeah.
Segue. What is mansplain?
Well, it would be you explaining to me either why what you just did wasn't sexism, or explaining.
I don't think that's what it is. I think mansplain is to make an assumption, to say something in an assuming way. You talked about the problem of oversmiling, which really resonated with me. Sometimes smiling at a black person can be racist.
It's a reminder, you know, those 1,000 daily cuts. It's a reminder of your position in relation to that other person, right? Because that person likely knows why I'm smiling at them. When I go to the grocery store, I don't really look at anybody. I just do my thing. But I see a black person, I feel almost an uncontrollable sense of urgency to signal to them that I'm okay and that I'm not racist and that they're welcome.
Is it, would the right strategy to be to for a white person to say, well, hey, I'm just going to operate in this situation as a normal person. I'm not going to think about race. I'm not going to notice. Just see people as human beings. Is that the right way?
No, because first of all, you do see them as a black person. You do. I mean, I'm not going to pretend I don't notice that there's a black person in the grocery store.
So we want to notice race, but not...
We want to be honest that we do notice race.
We don't notice it, don't focus on it.
Yeah,
But think about it. But, I mean, you notice it, focus on it a little bit, but not too much.
Yeah, you know, it's a balance, right?
I hear, forget that I'm black, don't forget that I'm black. Notice, don't notice. Don't deny that you're racist, but also try not to be racist, but also don't realize that you're... It makes me...
Yeah.
That makes me, I'm sorry,
It's okay.
It just it makes me feel overwhelmed. And,
yeah, yeah. Just take your time.
I know you work on this in your seminars, people workshopping actual real-life scenarios. So would you mind kind of a role play where okay. I will, in this scenario, be the person of color who's bringing concern to you, and then you'll show how to navigate that?
Sure.
Okay, so workplace scenario. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
I noticed you passed by me in the hall earlier today, and you were really overdoing the smile, and it made me feel patronized, and it felt racist. And I'm thinking about going to HR about it.
Well, I appreciate you letting me know, and I imagine that's not without its risks. I certainly would not have intended to have that impact on you, but I'm very clear that I did have that impact on you. I would love to offer you a repair if that's something you're ready for.
I don't want to talk about it right now. Okay. Because I'm hurt.
Okay, understood. If that changes, let me know.
When I'm ready to talk, I'll talk to you.
Understood.
What I would like to do, let's fast forward another day. Next day.
Okay.
Hi, Robin. Passed by in the hall again, and this time you didn't even smile at all at me.
Okay.
And it made me feel otherized, excluded, marginalized, vaporized. Now I'm really thinking about going to HR. I don't feel comfortable with you in this workplace with me.
Okay. And yesterday we had the over-smiling incident.
Yeah, now it's under smiling.
I would say I'm a little bit confused about how best to proceed. I can't deny that I am. Would you be willing to give me some guidance?
I don't think it's up to me to educate you.
Understood. Is there anyone you trust that I could talk to, maybe another white person who's understanding?
At this point, I think we should take separate hallways.
Okay.
So.
Understood.
That was a very nuanced situation.
Yeah, I did my best. Yeah. That's probably what I would do in that situation.
The very, very last thing that I want to do, and it doesn't even feel right to me to end this conversation, especially when there are people of color in the room.
Okay.
Ben, if you're willing to come and sit with us for just a moment.
Sure. So it's Ben.
Yeah, this is Ben, producer on the film. And I thought it would be a powerful opportunity to speak directly to a person of color and confront our racism and also apologize for the white supremacist systems that oppress Ben. So do you want to go first?
Well, on behalf of myself and my fellow white people, I apologize. It is not you, it is us. As long as I'm standing, I will do my best to challenge it.
I want to pay you reparations right now. Will you accept?
I won't turn it down.
Okay. I don't know. This is all I have. I know that's not gonna. That doesn't make up for 400 years of oppression, but it's all that I have to give.
I don't know if it's ever enough, but what I can say is I appreciate the fact that you're putting in the work. I think you're right. I don't think it'll ever end, but there is small progress I think we made today.
Did you want to pay any?
That was really weird.
Why was it weird?
That just seemed really weird to me.
Why?
Because you just took out your wallet and I don't know. Because I think reparations is like a systemic dynamic and approach. And so, I mean, I think there, there may be some people who would be offended by. Clearly, we're not offended by that.
I won't turn down cash.
I think, are we gonna allow ourselves to be uncomfortable and just do what we can personally, or are we gonna sit around waiting for the system to catch up?
Yeah, they go together, right?
Yeah, but this is something that I can do right now. Why wouldn't I do it?
Well, clearly, I mean, you did it, and he was comfortable with it. I just seemed like it's not a systemic approach, or it just seemed.
It's not, because I'm not waiting for the system. Yeah. I'm acting as an individual.
I can go get some cash for sure. You might, yeah.
If that's something you think,
yeah,
would
I don't
be
mind.
A step.
If that would be something that would be comfortable for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. That's all I can say.
Oh well. You know.
Usually carry cash.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
This is powerful to me. I thank you for.
Sure.
For doing that. Well, the last thing is, will you sign my book?
Of course.
If you don't mind.
I'm definitely going to process that.
The student has become the teacher. My moment has finally arrived. It's time to show other white people how to do the work and make a little money in the process. I'm taking everything I've learned on my anti-racist journey and turning it into my own online DEI course. Now anybody can earn their own DEI certificate, and I've already made $3,248. But for a more in-depth approach, I'm rolling out an in-person workshop. I'm calling it the Do the Work Workshop.
With the purpose of providing practical and innovative, long-lasting solutions to promote equality in our society, Do the Work Workshop was born.
Our next guest offers a bold and uncompromising workshop that aims to bring lasting change.
So what you're doing is you're stretching, and this is more for you and less for you, but you're stretching up like mm-hmm. this, and you're mm-hmm. stretching out, and what you're doing is you're stretching out of your whiteness. Okay, so you're decentering your whiteness. You're stretching out of your whiteness, and you're bringing those other experiences into yourself.
What exactly does it mean to do the work with Do the Work Workshop?
What does it mean to you to do the work?
There's a reason we say do the work, that it is work that you have to do. It's right there in the name. You know, what is the work? It's the work that we're doing. It's about the doing, and it's also about the work. What is to do? It is to do the thing. We might also use the analogy, another one I like, of raking leaves. The leaves of racism are falling. We're raking them. They keep falling. We rake them. But you don't get to a point where you say, well, I'm done with the leaves. Then you have leaves all over the yard.
How can somebody get involved if they're watching this right now?
Where can people get a hold of you and see you for your next workshop?
We're doing the work as we speak. The workshop is happening this fall. If you would like to sign up.
You don't need to bring anything with you but an open mind. We're not letting anyone in who doesn't have an open mind. Also, there's a fee, of course, as well. That's described on the website. But, you know, the open mind is the main thing.
Matt, the certified DEI. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Finding white people willing to do the work isn't exactly easy. So I also advertised my workshop on Craigslist, which, as we know, is the best place for finding white people who are willing to do just about anything.
Who's ready to do the work? Anybody? I know I am. Welcome to the Do the Work workshop. Thank you all for being here. Listen, let's get the credentials out of the way up front. I am a certified diversity, equity, and inclusion expert. I have the card and all that, but I keep the card in the back pocket for this, because I'm just a person on a journey, just like many of you. But by the end of the 9 steps, you're going to start to feel more like an anti-racist ally. That ultimately is our goal here. Let's dive in right away with step one. And here's where we reflect both externally and internally. It's all about adopting an appropriate attitude of humility and also realizing that racism lurks many places in society where we don't expect it. It's going to seem a little strange, So I'll look around the room and point to who we believe, just by looking, is the most racist person in the room. That's a good point.
I'm out, guys. Appreciate y'all. Yeah. Have a lovely
Thank
day.
You. Thank you, I appreciate it, but that's definitely not my...
It's uncomfortable. Here's where I'm pointing. But why don't we think about pointing at ourselves? Why would we rather get up and leave the room? Let's go to step two. This is a pretty simple, basic, anti-racist concept. Racism is non-binary. What does that mean? It means racism is on a spectrum. What does that mean? It means that racism is fluid. You might move up or down. So you might say, well, I'm kind of a 3 on the racism scale, but there may be moments when you're a 6, when you're a 9, God forbid. We all have numbers on your desks, and those are magnetized. Where do you think that you are on this scale right now? Wherever you would judge yourself. So everybody wants to be, obviously we've got a little bit of a traffic jam over at 012. Let's just keep that, we're gonna keep that up there. We're gonna keep that in mind as we move on. Now next we move on to what this whole workshop is really about, which is uncomfortable conversations. Because until we're willing to talk about these things, healing can't really begin. So I want you to think back to a racist moment in your life, just something that you remember, you did or said, you wish you could take it back. But how does the healing start if we're not willing to admit and talk about it? I'll give you a racist moment of mine from 2 months ago, and I'll tell you exactly what happened. I was at a traffic light in my car. I see a black man of color, hears me walking up to my car. What do? I check to make sure the doors were locked. And immediately I thought, I hope he didn't hear that little click sound. Why'd I do that? Thought he might be trying to carjack me. Unconscious bias. Now, in this case, the guy behind me did get carjacked. But does that mean that the assumption was fair? Anybody else would like to share? Number 8, racist moment.
When I was getting my license when I was 16, I was in the DMV and I was really stressed out. It was like a terrible day. Despacito was a song playing on the radio. And I was just like so annoyed by it. I was like, oh my God, I've heard this song so many times. And I just sort of like blurted out. And I was like, oh God, like, can you please turn off the song? The guy at the DMV was a Puerto Rico guy. And he just got really like offended by it. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, I really didn't mean that. I just kind of yelled at the song just because I was feeling bad inside, but it just came off really bad. And I still feel bad about that every day.
Was racist. We're not here to lie to ourselves. Now things are getting heated up. Now we move on to step 6, over-smiling. When you're in the room with a black person, a person of color, there's this compulsion that people have to smile too much. You're overcompensating. I like to put words into action. So Ben, if you wouldn't mind, Ben, let's put Ben here. Thank you. Thanks, Ben. Now, Ben is gonna stand here and let's try to look at Ben in the least racist way that we know how. Well, number 2, you're not even looking at him.
I think he's not looking at us, so it's kind of awkward to look at someone like they're a specimen, if that makes sense. Like the exercise itself is a little awkward in that.
It's not his job as a black man to make us feel comfortable in this moment.
That's not what I was saying, though.
Thanks, Ben. Now, we're gonna really take the gloves off. This is where things get real. White silence. White silence is when we remain silent in the face of bigotry and racism. Now, what we like to tell ourselves is that as long as I'm not using the N-word, okay, as long as I'm not voting for Donald Trump, I'm not racist. By not taking action in the face of racism, we are participating in that racism. But here's the good news. It's never too late to break the white silence and speak up against racism. Things are gonna get really uncomfortable now, especially for me. because what I want to do is lead by example. My Uncle Frank is here today. Can we bring my Uncle Frank out? Thank you, Ben. Uncle Frank, it was 20 years ago that you sat at the dinner table with us, and not a day has gone by that I haven't thought about this. You sat at that dinner table and you made what you said was a joke. You asked the question, what's the difference between a Mexican man and a picnic table? And the answer was, a picnic table can support a family of five. Still laughing. We all laughed at the table. I laughed, but I was scared and confused, and I was a coward. But I'm not gonna be a coward anymore, Uncle Frank. You had no right to make that joke. Latinx Americans, they come to this country and they work hard. And your little joke dehumanizes. It is not funny. Uncle Frank, it is not funny to mock marginalized people. It's not a joke. It's not funny. Uncle Frank. Okay, who wants to go next? Does anybody have some words for Uncle Frank? We're breaking the white silence here today. Number six, you're of Hispanic descent. What are your thoughts?
I have a lot of thoughts, but I just feel like they'd be wasted on him. But I do have one thing to say, if with your permission. F*** you.
Yeah, man, f*** you. I don't talk to anyone in my family because they're all f***ing racist white pieces of trash in a lot of different ways, but the racism is the biggest reason. I have cut off every person in my life, including my mother and father, grandparents, everything. I do not give a f***.
Powerful. The message is clear. Okay, Ben, if you wouldn't mind. Thanks, Uncle Frank. See you this weekend. All right, emotions are high, and this is where we finally get to step nine. We have to ask ourselves, are we ready for the healing pain? Now, this is when we get to the self-flagellation portion, which is the final step.
Wow.
Would you mind taking the wood? Okay, thank you.
What is this?
Dude, this is ridiculous. I'm
me too.
You're nuts, bro. I can't deal with this. I tried, man. I tried. I'm seriously done.
Well, I said it was going to be uncomfortable.
Why weren't they willing to whip themselves? Wait, why were these people willing to whip themselves? None of this feels right.
Hang on. This is probably too far. Okay, the workshop's over. It's over. That's step nine, so. Yeah, it's over, seriously. Yep, thanks, okay.
What am I doing? What have I become? Am I making the world better? Or am I just profiting on people's racial guilt? This is all wrong. I followed the anti-racist playbook, and it led to disaster.
All across America, many companies have implemented a division of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it's important to have this in the workplace, no matter how big or small the organization may be. Joining us this morning is Matt, a certified diversity, equity, and inclusion expert. Good morning.
Morning.
Tell us about your journey.
It hasn't been great, honestly.
And what led you to host this workshop? Why is this an important initiative, and how did you go about putting the workshop together?
We just did a workshop. It didn't go well, honestly. I think it's doing more harm than good. This whole thing's a scam. I don't know.
So when we think about diversity, equity, and inclusion, as we mentioned, there are keys to what an organization should focus on. So what would you say is the key for the learning that we may want to be doing? Even if we're not quite there yet, right?
Just go live your life. I gotta go.
Black, right?
Yeah, thanks.
Haven't seen you around here in a while.
Yeah, I've been out doing the work.
Huh?
Been doing the work.
What does that mean?
Well,
white fragility is a really great place to start.
The reason we cannot be colorblind now, we're still working on the problem.
I'm not going to pretend I don't notice that there's a black person in the grocery store.
DEI certified, I'm here to help.
We live in a white supremacist society.
Whiteness is even more insidious than I even knew.
The only thing about white culture is buying things and stealing things.
And whiteness also robs you of your brain.
America is racist to its bones.
It has to burn. The entire system has to burn.
Why are you blaming me for what my ancestors did? It's not my fault.
We want to rename the George Washington Monument.
This country is a piece of shit.
Love is also not always patient and kind.
It's not that much different than Nazi doctors.
Republicans are Nazis.
Kindness is not what it's called for.
It's not funny, Uncle Frank.
You. I can go get some cash for sure.
Raise a glass if you're racist.
Okay. Let me know if you need anything else.
You know, this experience has really taught me something. The anti-racist industry says that America is racist down to its bones. And if that were true, there wouldn't be anything we could do about it. White people could only wallow in their guilt, and black people in their victimhood. It's a lie. It's a lie meant to manipulate us. Look, we'll never live in a utopia. We all know that. But we don't have to be held hostage by these race-baiting con artists who want us to be bitter and angry and resentful. They're selling us the disease. And they're telling us there's no cure. They don't say that I'm racist and you're a victim because that's what they think we are. They tell us that because that's what they want us to be. Time for us to say no.
Bless your heart. I got a lot of tables.
Hey, you want to hear a joke?
I
racist? Why do you judge by the color of our faces? Cause racial division is the plan by the matrix. They burn down our cities, then they get called courageous. Instead of condemning the media, give them praises. Oh man, what is the benefit? When the media ruin our images. If you a white male, you get called a white supremacist. If your opinion and the narrative have differences. Couple that in with all the censorship. And the damage they can do is limitless. No Brad Cooper, but celebrities defending it. Oh man, they gon' say I'm racist, but they call everybody racist. I guess that mean nobody is racist. Nah, it doesn't mean much when you say it. When you say it, they gon' say you racist, but they call everybody racist. I guess that mean nobody is racist. Nah, it doesn't mean much when you say it. They make you think that there's no way you can win. Another news clip, here we go again. Judging somebody by the color of their skin. Meanwhile, it's all coming to an end. They ask why, and I just tell them, listen. Are you mad because we don't think you a victim? You made bad choices, then you blame it on the system. Nowadays, being white means you can't have an opinion, especially if you Christian. Tell me, is it racist to not want our cities burned down by these mobs? To not want our stores always getting robbed? Is it racist to treat our racists like it's a god? Oh man, they gon' say I'm racist, but they call everybody racist. I guess that mean nobody is racist. Nah, it doesn't mean much when you say it. When you say it, they gon' say you racist, but they call everybody racist. I guess that mean nobody is racist. Nah, it doesn't mean much when you say it. When you say it. When you say it, when you say it, they gon' say you racist, but they call everybody racist. I guess that mean nobody is racist. Nah, it doesn't mean much when you say it. When you say it, they gon' say I'm racist, but they call everybody racist. I guess that mean nobody is racist. Nah, it doesn't mean much when you say it. One more time, they gon' say you racist, but they call everybody racist. I guess that mean nobody is racist. That doesn't mean much when you say it. When you say it. When you say it.
Will you set us free?
Woo!
Set us free.
Thank you for calling the Boulder Bookstore. How can I help you?
Hi, I was just in the other day, and I saw a certain book that I wasn't ready to read at the time, but I think I'm ready. I wanted to see if you guys still had it in stock.
Yeah, what was the title?
It starts with an N. I don't remember the author. It's
You don't know the title of the book either?
Well, it starts with an N. It's like there's a vowel, there's consonants, there's a vowel. It's one word.
Don't know how to look it up without the title or the author.
Well, it's got kind of, so it starts with an N, and then there's kind of an I there, and it's.
We've got thousands of books, so I don't really know how to look it up, but just knowing the first two letters.
It's N I. It's so it's a, like the N I. There's the it's a G is in there, and there's another one.
Do you want a brief hold and go check? Thanks for holding. I'm not seeing anything. I mean, maybe try to think of the title if you can and call.
Well, back. It's no, I know the title. I just can't say the title. And
okay.
I don't know. I don't think you can say it either. So I don't. It's a very. It's a triggering title. It rhymes with trigger, actually. And so. But that's what I was wondering if it was there.
I didn't see it when I just went and looked.
Okay, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's that book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have a good day.